This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio on every U.S. military base in the world, on your electronic device via TuneIn, Progressive Voices, Tom Hartman app, and simulcast as television via Free Speech TV Network on Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems all over the country. Really pleased to have on the line with us Congresswoman Gwen Moore. She represents the 4th District of Wisconsin. She's an active member of the Congressional Progressive Caucus and the LGBT Equality Caucus. GwenMoore.house.gov is her website. You can tweet her at Rep. Gwen Moore. She's also a 13-year veteran of the Financial Services Committee. Congresswoman, welcome back to the program. It's been quite a while since you've been with us.
It sure has been, Tom. So glad to be back. We have to make sure we don't let this big lapse occur again.
I agree.
Too much to talk about.
Yeah, indeed. And if you'd ever like to come on for a full hour and take calls from our listeners, I'd love to have you host that. I'd love to host that for you.
Done.
Tell me, thank you. Tell me about this week. I believe today, or maybe it's tomorrow, is the 10th anniversary of the beginning of the great, I call it the great Bush crash, but, they call it the financial crisis. Just like, back in the 30s, they always referred to the Great Depression as the Republican Great Depression, and it wasn't until after World War II that the Republicans succeeded in getting the media to take that word out, and now it's the Great Depression. Anyhow, this is the 10th anniversary, and you've been on the Financial Services Committee for 13 years. What did we do wrong, and what have we learned from that, and have we applied any of what we've learned to law and policy?
Well, what we quote-unquote did wrong is to try to accommodate our Republican friends, more moderates, and we just didn't go far enough with financial reform and Dodd-Frank. We tried to compromise. I'll give you a really good example, the whole too-big-to-fail notion. The original proposal is that we wanted these banks to ante up front to build a fund so that we would never again have a $700 billion bailout of the banks. And they pushed back on that, and so we didn't have that fund. Another thing that we did wrong, I think, other than the fact that nobody went to jail, that's a whole hour-long show.
Yep.
But I think another thing that we did wrong is we didn't help underwater homeowners. Mm. I mean, we have trillions of dollars that ordinary homeowners lost due to this bailout, and while we bail the banks out, and they are extremely profitable, I mean profitable into the billions of dollars, there are still people who are underwater in their homes, people who didn't necessarily contribute to the crash, who can't even afford to fix their windows or fix their roofs, because, middle-class people's wealth was held in their houses way back into the 30s, as you indicated before, Tom. I mean, if you're middle class, your wealth is in your house versus stocks and bonds.
Yep.
And so the Tea Party came along, and they basically stopped us from helping ordinary homeowners who were underwater due to this crash. And so they lost wealth in their homes. We see home ownership rates declining. The housing market has not, quote unquote, come back. And we don't know what a strong economy looks like without a strong housing market. So those are a couple of things that I think we didn't do right at the time. Go on, Tom.
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to respond to the second part of your question. Have we learned our lesson?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, what contributed to the crash is that we had too much debt. We didn't have a good regulatory regime, including protecting consumers. We had huge income inequality. Income inequality that parroted what we saw in 1929, 1930 Depression era income inequality, and we saw that there just was not enough capital requirements in our financial institutions. Since we passed Dodd-Frank, what have we done? We're back to huge debts. I mean, just last night, the Ways and Means Committee gave rich people yet another, unrequested, by the way, tax break, increasing our debt even more. There has been a steady drumbeat to reduce the regulatory regime that we put in place through Dodd-Frank, including the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which returned about $12 billion to consumers who had been victimized. Of course, income inequality is as great as it's ever been, Tom. Mm-hmm. Another thing, the fiduciary standard, the best interest standard, which says that a broker has to operate in the best interest of their client before they help them with the investment advice, the fiduciary rule is like dead.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're just stuck on stupid waiting on dumb to come.
Well said. Back in the 30s when, when FDR came into office, when he was sworn in March of 1933, that week, the last of the banks in America failed. And so it was just total wreckage of the banking system. And basically, what Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt for the first few months had done was just let the banks fail. But Roosevelt stepped in and he put into place a government program. And I'm sorry, I don't have the name of it right off the top of my head. It's been a number of years since I wrote about this. But basically, we were buying mortgages from the banks. Because the standard mortgage back then was a 5-year balloon, and it was basically the speculative bubble in the 1920s, and so we bought these 5-year balloons and we turned them into 30-year fixed rate mortgages and allowed hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of American homeowners to stay in their homes as a result of that. So we bailed out the homeowners in the 30s rather than the banks, and we let the banks fail. And I think history shows that America was better for it. Obviously, we did the exact opposite in 2008, 2009. We bailed out the banks and we let the homeowners fail. And the homeowners are still suffering. Housing prices are not even back up to where they were in 2007. How do we institutionalize this learning, Congresswoman Moore?
Well, we should elect Democrats.
There you go. Okay. You got it.
But I do think that it really requires a strong education program.
Yeah.
I think that financial services is a difficult subject, and people's eyes glaze over when you start talking numbers, and particularly when you get into the trillions of dollars. And, I mean, Republicans make it sound real good. Oh, all we have to do is just name it the Tax Cut and Middle Class Families Act.
Right.
And somehow people believe that. And so, last night, for example, they eliminated, eliminated the top category for taxes. And so that, people think that maybe that's going to help me. No, it doesn't help you if you're making $40,000 a year. And I think that it's really, really important for us to break down financial conversations at a kitchen table level, and share this information with people.
To what extent do your colleagues in the Democratic Caucus, the other Democrats in the House of Representatives, I know that the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which you're a member of, is all over this, but how widely held is this belief that we've got to reduce the power of the banks and these big corporations, these big financial institutions, and strengthen, essentially the power of government as a protective agency? Is there a debate in the Democratic Caucus about this?
Right. Well, here's the thing, Tom. Often arguments become conflated. Mm-hmm. No one disagrees that debt is injurious to our economy. So, but it's how you define spending. So Republicans will say, well, gee, we're in debt, so we can't spend on you.
Right.
We can't spend on human beings. We can't spend on education. You know, we need to cut Social Security. We need to cut Medicare. And, you know, Republicans don't define giving breaks to corporations as spending. And it is spending.
Mm-hmm.
It is spending. When you spend through the tax code, you're still spending. They define that as an investment. You know, so it's wordplay. And I think that it's incumbent upon us to educate people that, yes, when we say that $1.5 trillion worth of tax cuts is not an investment, it's stuff that's going to go to a shareholder.
Yep.
It's stuff that's going to go for, you know, share buybacks. People have got to understand that that doesn't translate into a chicken in every pot.
No, it translates into big bonuses for CEOs, and that's about it.
Right, right, right. And it just outright let Republicans lie to you. Oh, you're going to get a wage increase, which people deserve. 1% of these tax cuts have gone to people in increased wages. And what is much more common, Tom, is to see, you know, lost jobs, and share buybacks.
Yeah, yeah. It's really a boondoggle. Congresswoman Gwen Moore. You can tweet her at Rep Gwen Moore, GWENMOORE. Her website, gwenmoore.house.gov. Congresswoman, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Great talking.
We're going to do this.
I agree. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you. And welcome back. James in Cupertino, California. Hey, James, what's on your mind? You wanted to pick up on our conversation about pot yesterday with, what was her name?
Angela Baca.
Angela Baca. There you go.
Yeah, Tom, this is Joe in Cupertino. I really appreciate you taking my call. I was listening to Gwen, and I'm glad I took notes that I wanted to talk about my pot, because I just love her. She's great.
Yeah, she is.
I've gotten some of the greatest guests. I mean, we had to roll on at the beginning of the week, and then, of course, you had Mark. I just think your service that you provide to the community, for me especially because he's in my district, but, I mean, it's just outstanding. You know, he was talking about how Amazon's taking all the money, and the bees are not sharing the wealth, and that's kind of the way I look at healthcare, you know, when it comes to healthcare. But I wanted to talk about your guest yesterday. I had a personal experience with going through chemo, and I chose not to take the Zoloft that they had, the anti-nausea medication, and I instead went to my doctor. We talked about THC, and so I tried the Vapen, and I was doing that for about a year. I quit chemo, and I was still having the nausea, and I was wondering what the heck was going on. And I guess, I don't know, I just ran upon this study that found that when you're using the vape pen for some reason over a prolonged period of time, you'll develop these symptoms of some bowel disorder, and people are going to the emergency room because they're not understanding what this is doing to them. And I wasn't either. I find myself having to take a shower like 4 times a day. And so I stopped using the vape pen altogether. In fact, I abstained from smoking for about 6-8 months before I went back to just regular roll, like the used smoke in the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come back. So I think there's a lot to what you're saying about the processing of the THC and the cannabinoids. I mean, I'm just right. an older guy, and I just remember we used to buy it from our friends for $10. But now it's come to my opinion that we have to be careful that we don't, you know, take something that's holistic and natural and then convert it into a for-profit and then all of a sudden say, oh, it's bad. Because I think we've come a long way. I'm amazed that I'm getting
I don't think it's just the profit, Joe. It's the idea of distilling and concentrating and standardizing. Yeah, we've all come to accept that this is a good thing, that, you know, if you're taking a drug, you want to know exactly how much of the drug and how strong it is. And, you know, quack, quack, quack. I went to my vape store, my local vape store, here in Portland, right after, you know, the afternoon after I had, what was her name again? Angela, gotcha. That's right. Mm-hmm. After Angela was on, and I said, I want one of those kind of pipes that you know heats up raw herb and vaporizes it so that I can inhale it without catching it on fire and burning it, you know, so it's easier on my lungs. But I want to go back to natural herb instead of vape pens and things. And they were like, well, we don't, you know, they had one in the store and it was a little tiny thing that would have been, you know, more hassle than it was worth to use or to own. I said, well, can you get me a Volcano, I think is the brand that she was talking about. And they were like, yeah, but we'll have to order it. And, you know, it's like, wow, it's like there should be all kinds of these things, I would think. So,
well, you know, we have a lot of those in my area, those stores that sell all of this stuff. And I really appreciated the fact that she was pointing out about transdermal absorption. That's really a cool idea when you think about
it. Yeah, it is. But once again, it's with concentrates and things. But yeah, I get the point. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. I'm curious about all of it. It's a fascinating topic, and there's so much breadth there, you know. There's so much that can be done with pot. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Back with Anything Goes Friday right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching us on a Roku box on Free Speech TV. What's up?
Nazadrovia, comrade, is another glorious day in Trumpistan, is it not?
It is. Indeed it is.
Hey, you do not like when conservatives call liberals and progressives Democrats, right?
Well, I don't like it when they refer to the so-called Democrat Party, because there is no such thing as the Democratic Party. But
I got an idea to turn the tables. What do you think?
All right. What's the idea?
In about 4 months, they're going to be trying to walk away from Trump, and we can't let that happen. They steadfastly stood behind the most corrupt president in American history, thereby world history. From now on, I'm never going to say GOP Republicans. As long as that party exists, we have to call them the Party of Trump, but they're going to try to walk away from it.
Yep, the Trumplicons.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I agree that the Republicans are going to start walking away from Trump in a big way and in a fast way. And I think that this is even without the possibility of criminal indictments of Trump and the rest of his crime family as a result, in particular, of Paul Manafort flipping right now. Even without that, I think people are so horrified by the kidnapping children and putting them in cages, and his language, his supporting Nazis, as President Obama said, you know, this is not rocket science to say Nazis are not good, right? I mean, this doesn't require a great intellect, but apparently it's beyond the capabilities of Donald Trump. So I think that it's catching up with him, and particularly if the Republican Party gets routed in the election, in the congressional election that's coming up in 7 weeks, there's going to be some real serious reevaluations on the Republican side, and they may even throw him under the bus. And we can't let them. Go ahead.
You mean the Party of Trump?
That's correct. The Party of Trump is going to try to say, no, we're not the Party of Trump. We're the Party of Ted Cruz, or you know, whatever. You know, we'll see where it goes. But I don't think it's going to be a good thing. Chaz, thanks a lot for the call. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
My friend, Tom Hartman. Interesting to find out yesterday that you used to be a DJ for country and western music, eh?
Yeah, that's where I started when I was 16.
You know the beauty then that is Merle Haggard and especially George Jones.
Oh, yeah, those guys know how to sing.
No doubt about it, and simpatico. You listen to contemporary music at all?
Occasionally. I don't much listen to music these days unless it's, you know, some of the old stuff I've got on my phone. Why?
I love music. I'm a strong fan of music. It's very spiritual. There's a band called One Republic and an album called Native.
Sean is clapping her hands. I don't know about this.
It is excellent. It's the best album I've ever heard.
Huh?
Single album. Comparing Beatles, Rolling Stones, Donovan, Led Zeppelin.
What's the band again?
Anybody.
Republic, you said?
One Republic.
One Republic. I will have to check it out. And I'm sure Sean won't let me forget to do so. James, thanks a lot. It's great on Anything Goes Friday. We can talk about pretty much anything. You know, what's the best music? I'm still listening to old Al Stewart tunes, you know. The Best of Al Stewart is one of my favorite all-time albums. Oh, boy. And Leonard Cohen, his last album is just absolutely haunting. I can't get away from it. It's 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
In fact, I think Leonard Cohen's last album is you know, one of the great all-time albums, period. We'll be back with more of your calls at Anything Goes Friday. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception, Tom Hartman here with you. Mark in Valley, Washington. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind today?
Well, I was hoping you could give me a good reason or strategy to why Schumer would capitulate to McConnell and just fast-track 15 Superior Court justices through.
He did that in exchange for the ability of the Democrats in the Senate who are running for re-election to go home and campaign. And whether that was a good trade-off or not, I honestly don't know. That's a very, very inside baseball thing. But he made, and Chuck Schumer is a very smart politician. He's been around for a long, long time. He made that decision. The concern that a lot of people have is he going to be forced to make that kind of choice again if Mitch McConnell decides to hold the Senate open, in the time leading up to the election on November 8th, or November 6th, I guess, is the election this year. And if so, what's he going to have to give up to get that? And at what point have we given up too much? And I frankly, Mark, don't know the answer to that. And I would love to be talking to a senator about it. And we'll do our best that we can, to get that out there. Mike in Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Mike, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to call in. You had mentioned with one of your callers that, for or so months we would, or many Republicans would be walking away from Trump. I wish I had your optimism, and I know there's some things that could happen legally, but for 2 years, I have said to myself, this is going to be the moment. This is going to be the time when the polls go down, and they do. Periodically, they go up and down, but I can just tell you, even from family members of mine, they dig their heels in, and I just don't see any swaying from the Republicans. And even the ones who, on occasion, will say something that the news, the media will grab and say, hey, even these one or two Republicans have said something that, is against Trump or whatever. They never name him. They never...
No, I get all that, and I don't disagree with you. I would say watch three things, Mike. Number one, watch Fox News and see when Fox News abandons Donald Trump, he's toast. And, I mean, he'll be toast in a matter of months once Fox News abandons him. And so then the question is, what will provoke Fox News to abandon him? Watch the economy. If the economy goes in the tank, that could be it. And watch what happens with the Supreme Court. Brett Kavanaugh goes on the Supreme Court in October. If he does, and everybody's saying he will, I don't think it's a done deal, and I think it's still worth fighting. But if he does, and if the Supreme Court immediately starts getting into these issues like, blowing up Roe v. Wade, et cetera, the backlash is going to be huge. It's going to be substantial. And at that point, the Republican Party may be turning against Trump. And then a fourth thing I would add is, watch Robert Mueller. If he comes down with an indictment, I mean, the Republicans were actively and aggressively defending Richard Nixon right up until the day after the tapes were publicized, what was on the tapes came out. And at that point, they couldn't do it anymore. But they had been calling it a witch hunt. That's literally the phrase that they used. It's like Roger Stone is advising Donald Trump to use the same language Richard Nixon did. Roger Stone has Nixon tattooed on his back. He worked for Richard Nixon. And he's trying the Nixon playbook, and I don't think it's going to work. Or I think it's going to play out the same way it did with Nixon, when it becomes obvious to everybody. And the interest groups, the billionaires have already gotten their tax cut. They may get another smaller one, but they've got what they needed and what they wanted. I'm not sure that they needed it. In fact, I think it's bad for the country. The deregulation agenda is firmly in place, and now you've got Wheeler in the EPA, who's carrying on Scott Pruitt's tradition of destroying the environment, only doing it low profile so it doesn't look like a clown show. Ryan Zinke is selling off our public lands, has already done that. So basically, the Republicans are in a position now where they don't need Donald Trump anymore. They got their Supreme Court nominee. They got their tax cuts. That was the juicy stuff that they were waiting for. And they know that Mike Pence will deliver everything else they want. He's a reliable toady of the Koch brothers. He's a client of the Koch brothers, essentially. So that's my take on it. Mike, you think I'm wrong?
No, actually, you put it in perspective, and I would add another one. When people who make around the amount of money that I make, which is not tremendous, realize that next year it's probably going to cost us more in taxes.
Right.
For some of us who did, for some people who did support him within that income level, I think that's going to hurt him. And I can tell you, as a gay man, we have to stop these nominations as long as we can.
Yep.
I know that hasn't come up. They don't talk about it. No one wants to talk about it. But it's not just Roe v. Wade that can be undone.
Oh, Obergefell.
There's lots of things in it. It's death by a thousand cuts. They can say, yeah, you know, Roe v. Wade and Obergefell, it's all law. It's all established law, but it's death by a thousand cuts. You know, there's four places in my state, I think, where you can get an abortion. So this is how they're going to do it. One other thing, too, I did notice about Fox News, and then I'll let you go. I don't know if you know who Candace Owens is. She's kind of this, I hate to use the word idiot, but she's a complete idiot. She's this new right-wing darling that's on.
I don't know who she is.
Now.
Yeah.
You do or don't?
I do not. No, I don't watch Fox News.
Okay, well, don't waste your time watching her. But anywho, she was trying to peddle this conspiracy theory on Fox News on a panel with that the New York Times had published. They were the anonymous source. They basically were lying, and that New York Times, she's tried this a couple times, and the Fox News panel just shut it down. Just totally were like, no, New York Times wouldn't do that. And for the first time, I'm kind of like, wow, they're not just letting this evil mainstream media trope go. Like, they're actually really shutting this person down. I found that comforting for a brief moment.
I think things are moving in that direction. I mean, Shepard Smith is in the middle of the crosshairs over at Fox News because he's been willing to tell the truth about Donald Trump. I don't know how long they can continue. It's becoming obvious to everybody that Bob Woodward is right, that this guy is in over his head. He's incompetent. He's not curious. He's not smart. And he's not capable of doing the job that he has. And we need to do something about that quickly, you know, like the 25th Amendment. Mike, thanks for the call. These are all, in my opinion, very important issues. Kenyatta in Redlands, California. Hey, Kenyatta. Thanks for watching Free Speech. What's up?
Hey, thank you, Tom, because it's rarely do I talk to you twice in the same week over these years.
Yeah, we try to discourage that, but anyhow, what's on your mind?
I know that. But there was something really important that I wanted to talk to you about that I wasn't able to follow up with yesterday. You know, I don't know if you have the same concern, but I'm triangulating something that really worries me. I've got I'm looking at a president who says that the basic tenets of what holds this so-called society together, the media, law enforcement, he's saying that the news is fake news, that the media is no good. So now you've got a population, a significant portion of it, that doesn't trust the media. They don't trust what they read. They don't trust what they see. He's saying that law enforcement, the FBI specifically, but that they're corrupt and they're no good.
Right.
And at the same time, we have this whole thing going on with our elections. Now, prior to Trump, we had, you know, hanging chads, voting machines that didn't work, blah, blah, blah. But now you throw in the Russian meddling element and all of this stuff. This is basic stuff that holds the society together,
right,
particularly this one. And I'm very concerned about anything that may happen. Think of a terrorist attack or some major natural disaster. I think this place is going to come unglued, Tom. I really do. I mean, when you've got a population, a significant portion thereof, that have lost faith and, you know, the most basic foundations of the government and the society, I think it's very worrisome. Do you feel that same way?
I do, and I felt that way more a year ago than I do now, frankly, because what I'm seeing is people waking up. And in terms of, you know, the society coming completely unglued, I'm very skeptical about that. I think that so much of this just depends on Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch did this to Australia. In fact, he owns the majority of the media in Australia. He's the largest single media holder in Australia. I don't know if it's a majority, a plurality. He did this in the UK, and then he moved to the United States, and he's doing it to us. And say what?
I just want to tell you there's a big difference there, Tom. If you take the UK and Australia together, they don't have as many guns in the hands of the population as you do in the United States.
Well, on a per capita basis, Australia wasn't that far off from us, or at least far off from us maybe 15 years ago. And the Port Arthur massacre back in, I think it was 96 or 97, changed all that, and they changed their rules. And yeah, the UK doesn't. But I think the idea that Tim McVeigh's dream is going to come true, that the, you know, something is going to provoke basically a nationwide race riot, and the white people are going to be the ones who are rioting, and they're going to go out and kill people of color and Jews, which was what he thought he would provoke by blowing up the Oklahoma building, or the federal building in Oklahoma City, based on that novel, The Turner Diaries, which is so ubiquitous in these hard right neo-Nazi circles, where that's exactly the scenario. And, you know, he thought Bill Clinton was going to clamp down. He thought Bill Clinton almost started things, you know, with Waco. And so this was the 2-year anniversary of Waco to the day. And he was just going to all this kind of stuff. And it didn't work. You know, it didn't work. You get these ripples in the militia. But I think that the militia, the people that frankly, I knew some of these people back when I was a kid growing up in Michigan, or at least I knew their parents. And they are the fringe of the fringe. And I don't think, you know, beyond, you know, the kind of threats to you know, individuals, I don't think that they represent that much of a threat to our society. I am concerned about the breakdown of trust, the lack of trust in our institutions, Kenyatta. I agree with you on that. Thanks a lot for the call. I just, you know, you see the meeting in Charlottesville, you know, a year ago, and then they tried to redo it again this year, and it's like, yeah, nobody showed up. Here in Portland, it was just an enormous effort just to get a few racists, you know, out there, and they were wildly outnumbered by the protesters.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I am not saying I'm not concerned. I'm tremendously concerned. But I think at the end, good and right is going to prevail. I really do. And welcome back. Let's see here. Rob in Mesa, Arizona, listening on TuneIn Radio. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Yes, you got a few comments I wanted to put out there. Excuse me while I get to a place where I can talk.
Okay.
First off, I wanted just to say that I disagree with calling Russians Trump Republican, because once Trump's gone, it'll be meaningless. We just call them Russian Republicans.
Yeah, there you go.
So if they agree with Trump now, then they're Russian Republicans. But I just got three strategies for the Democratic Party, and one involves the voting, taxes, and medical. I'll go through them real quick here.
Sure.
The first one's on the vote. Our Congress should just quickly pass a law that says that all states who hand out provisional ballots or refuse someone at the ballot box, they have to do a follow-up letter and tell them what happened. Was there provisional ballot counted? And if it wasn't, why? And then that'll give them some heads up on the registration.
And something like 95% of all provisional ballots are not counted. I was going to get into this in the next hour. I've got all these, this extraordinary article from all these progressive activists in New York State who were given provisional ballots. And they're like, well, I voted my provisional ballot. Well, it didn't get counted. Excuse me.
That's
back
why
to you.
They had a follow-up to keep that alive, because people just think, and I did that here in Arizona, and they just admitted like 2 years ago that they go, we don't count that. We just want to get those people out of the booth so they didn't create a problem.
Yep.
So it's just more of a strategy. Okay, the second thing is on businesses. You know, since corporations are people, then the taxes should be the same for all of us. So I should get the same tax for businesses and vice versa. And, you know, get rid of this whole, dividend thing. And since corporations are people, you should be able to argue that, like all those people who lost money during the housing crisis. You know, they lost tens of $20,000. Well, why can't they carry that forward against their future income, just like a business?
Yeah. Since well, I think there was a time in our country where you could carry forward losses. It may be because I did it back in the 70s. It may be though that it was through a sub S corporation. I frankly don't remember. But yeah, I agree. You know, you should be able to carry forward losses.
And so the argument should just be, since we're all equal as businesses and people, the tax should be the same. We should have the same tax code, the same tax brackets, the same write-offs. Just create it equal. Let's just use a reverse digits on that one. Okay, the last one is just medical. This one's pretty a simple one. They need like a federal law that says that nobody can do this out-of-network stuff, because all that's doing is just, they're basically, you know, upping your deductible.
Yeah.
You know, because I checked into a hospital, it's a minor thing, but I asked the hospital, are you guys in network? They said yes. But everyone touched after that was on network.
So the doctor was out of network, the anesthesiologist was out of network.
So everyone else is out. You know, and I look for that in the form in that. But that's basically all I have on
and
that.
Thus they stuck you with bigger bills on your copay? Is that how it worked? If it's out of network?
Yeah, well, you go in, and then, oh, they're out of network, so now the doctor can charge an extra fee on top of it.
Right.
So it's just a way of kind of, you know, almost breach a contract, if you will. You know,
yeah, we're the only country in the world where the national healthcare system, to the extent that there is one, is there to extract wealth from the middle class and working people. We're the only country in the world that does that, at least developed country. I'm sure that, you know, some of the underdeveloped countries of the world, yeah, but, I mean, this is just outrageous.
And if I could, just a quick update on our election here.
Sure.
Kristen Sinema, who's running for the Senate seat for vacated by Flake.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing okay so far, TV ads-wise. She's taking the high road. Her opponent's taking the low road, and she looks pretty bad.
Good.
So far, but, you know, we got a ways to go. And then David Garcia for the governorship. I don't know. That one's a toss-up to me.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Rob, thanks a lot for the update. We'll be right back. Go to tomhartman.com/podcast. So let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you...
Third hour.
Oh, third hour? No, I got Luke Vargas on the line right now.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, I do. This report brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and Loving What You Do, Alan Ratner's new book. And on the line with us is Luke Vargas for Talk Media News, the chief foreign correspondent. You can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. Luke, welcome back. Hybrid 2. Luke?
Oh, can you hear me?
I do, yeah.
Terrific. Thanks for having me on. Let me walk you through the topics I've got today. I'm not sure if the email...
I just got the list. Canada, Mexico, and North and South Korea. Let's go for it.
Yeah, let's start with Canada. It's an interesting one. So, of course, Canada, our northern neighbor, is going to be legalizing marijuana nationwide on October 17th. And Justin Trudeau, the Canadian leader, has said, look, he doesn't expect the United States to change very many customs or border regulations to, you know, adapt to a changing, you know, legalized situation north of the border. But far from that, we are actually hearing that the United States is sort of digging in its heels and is promising to crack down further on various drug-related immigration crimes at the border. So there's an existing law, basically, that Customs and Border Patrol agents at the U.S.-Canada border can bar someone for life from entering the United States if they are a drug user. Any admission of past drug use is grounds for a lifetime ban from the U.S. is part of the actual...
Whoa, would that include medical marijuana?
It does, and we don't know. So that's sort of a gray area, and it's up for the people at the border to make those determinations.
And this is only with non-U.S. citizens, right?
Exactly. So this Politico has a story interviewing senior Customs and Border Patrol officials saying that the U.S. does not plan to change any border or admissions policies as this legalization goes into effect. But in fact, what they're sort of doing is expanding it because according to U.S. law, anyone who is involved in finance, venture capital financing, other sorts of backing financially for marijuana producers in Canada, which is going to be a very, very lucrative industry there, and you've already seen major venture capitalists get into that field,
Sure. Those
people are classified now by U.S. laws as drug traffickers because they are helping to boost the production and distribution. So we've actually had instances this year of major, you know, multi-millionaire, you know, investors in the legal pot industry in Canada
Right. Getting
those lifetime bans from entering the United States. So don't expect necessarily the fact that, you know, marijuana is going to be legal north of the border to, you know, reduce your risk of having a problem at the U.S. border. Far from it. It seems like there are actually a little bit more pitfalls that could befall these people.
Is this coming out of Jeff Sessions? And do you think Congress will clean this up?
It depends how much of an impact it actually has on cross-border movement. I say it's probably because so much rests on the discretion of border agents that it wouldn't be that hard to have a directive saying, look, I mean, if you smell pot in a car, tell them they can't come in today, but don't hit everybody with a lifetime ban.
Right.
And I think there's going to have to be some sort of guidance coming from maybe Treasury, because frankly, the medical marijuana industry in Canada is going to attract so many sort of individual investors, people who are not, you know, pouring tens of millions of dollars in, but just
sure.
a few hundred or $1,000 of personal investments. You're not going to be able to classify all those people as drug traffickers and ban them from life for the United States. So I would guess a little clarity comes here, but they're just not ceding any ground in advance.
Yeah, got it. Donald Trump is not only asking you and me to pay for his wall, in fact, talking about shutting the government down to force us to, but now he's also offering to pay Mexico to take deported Central American migrants. How much more of his money, of our money, does he want to use for this, and how is it being received by Mexico?
Well, it depends which Mexican government you're looking at, the current outgoing ones, or the lame duck president, or Enrique Peña Nieto, or Manuel Obrador, who's coming in December. So here's the plan. It's $20 million. It's not new money that they'd be asking taxpayers for. It's $20 million appropriated to the Merida initiative. This is sort of a U.S.-Mexico joint security financing fund, and they would put it towards paying the bus and train fare and plane fare for people from the Northern Triangle countries, these Central American countries which are having huge problems with gang violence and drug trafficking. The UN actually recognizes many of these people as, asylum seekers.
As refugees. Fleeing, yeah.
Right, or people who are eligible to at least apply to be refugees. And under Jeff Sessions, the DOJ has revoked that classification, saying, look, we don't consider these people to be, people who could be up for asylum protections. This is a step further. The U.S. Wanting to use $20 million to give it to the Mexican government to deport 17,000 people from Central America, not who are already in the U.S., but who are in Mexico, just basically say, get these people even further away from the United States. And obviously, rights groups here are justifiably concerned. I mean, we have international law principles of non-refoulement. Essentially, it is illegal. It's an international crime to send people back to areas where there's a high likelihood of their injury or death, depending on various political affiliations and the like. This, according to Amnesty, who I talked to earlier, saying, look, this is the U.S. outsourcing its international obligations and trying to get Mexico to do that work for it. We'll see. The current government says we're going to look at this proposal. The incoming government says not a chance. So even if maybe this deal gets put into place for a few months, I think once the new president's in December, he's likely to have another stance on this. And I don't see this really being viable, but it shows what the U.S. wants to be able to do, which is just to shift these asylum seekers as far away from America's border as possible.
Remarkable. In 5 seconds, Luke, North and South Korea meeting in Pyongyang. Should we be hopeful?
Let's just say yes, and we'll pick it up on Tuesday with more details.
Okay, sounds like a plan. Luke Vargas with Talk Media News. You can follow him on Twitter at The Courier. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you.
Good talking with you. We'll be back with more of Anything Goes Friday right after this. It's 57 minutes and a half past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.